A Better World with Mitch Raven, Monday, 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to A Better World. This is your host, Mitchell J. Raven. I am very glad you're joining us again today. Today, we are in studio, and we're going to have a very interesting show talking about a subject that really has much to do with this notion that we have spoken of many, many times, of essentially a form of mind over matter, and with much greater subtlety than that comment may suggest. It's the domain of Christian Science, and we're very blessed today to have a figure who has been long involved for some 50 years, in some ways longer, with Christian Science, and we'll be getting to that in a moment. I just want to let you all know that you can reach us at www.abetterworld to become part of our community, and our community is very involved in helping to educate people, to elevate people, to inspire people to live a more fruitful life, a more satisfying and fulfilling life, a life of meaning, a life also of pleasure and fun, but always dedicated to creating a better world, to creating a happier, more meaningful and deeper life, and making a difference in some way or another, contributing to the world. So please become part of this community. We need people. We have a newsletter that goes out every single week announcing who we will have on the radio show and who we'll have on the TV show. In fact, tomorrow evening is the TV show on at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time, and I'll be interviewing Lynn McTaggart, the author of a few books, one called The Field, for which she's extremely well known, the other called The Intention Experiment, and the next, which is the subject of this interview, called The Bond. And it's about the hardwiring in the brain that allows us to be fulfilled in our higher nature. We tend to think that human nature is really just about competition and survival, and this notion, I think a mistaken notion, of survival of the fittest and the so-called lower end, what we see, you could say, in Wall Street. But in fact, a lot of that is steeped in myth. And what we see is truly on the level of hardwiring in the brain, both on a hormonal and a dendritic level, is this notion of bonding, hence the name of the book, The Bond, wherein human beings want to and have a deep biological impulse, not to mention a spiritual one, to bond with each other, to have a sense of belonging, and actually to be in service to one another, to want to help one another, to lend a helping hand. It's not just being gracious, it's actually part of our DNA. And that is an aspect, a huge aspect, of human life and living that we all want to really become more familiar with. Because if you want to think about upgrading the world, upgrading ourselves, it's to be in touch with those impulses, those parts of our psychobiology, if you will, that deeper spiritual nature of us that has unfortunately sat dormant for too long, and hence our world looks the way it does. Well, we're really very interested at A Better World in turning this around. That's what we do on Progressive Radio Network. That's what we do on Manhattan Neighborhood Network. So please join our community. Again, www.abetterworld.net. And now we will be speaking about For the Hour with Lillian Schwab, who is a centenarian. As a matter of fact, she'll be turning 101 next month. And we're really very pleased to have her on the show to talk about something very deep in her heart, something with which she is very familiar. And it's something that I felt we should all get to know from someone in particular who has had decades of experience with this incredible, incredible gift to the world called Christian Science. Now, just for the record and general historical perspective, there is something also known as Jewish Science. And because Lillian is Jewish by birth but has embraced something called Christian Science, I set out to find a Christian who was very involved in Jewish Science. Well, I actually did not come up with one by the time the show was beginning, so I abandoned that idea. However, I did become generally familiar with this idea of Jewish Science, which we'll be touching upon a bit in the show, but for the record, it is something that really did evolve out of Jewish Science at a time in the teens and the 20s when there was a fairly significant migration of Jews to Christian Science. There was something obviously very appealing about it, and remains appealing to all people to this day, which is why it's become so very popular, and probably is a way of stemming that tide. Various rabbis, one named Alfred Moses, another one a few years later named Rabbi Lichtenstein and his wife Tehila, formalized the teachings of Jewish Science by reaching back to the Old Testament and grabbing certain principles that were in common also to some extent with Christian Science, and they formulated this body of teaching which relied on the Torah and the Talmud for coming up with the Jewish form, if you will, of this notion that came up, was arranged by Mary Baker Eddy, arranged, discovered, illuminated, and we'll be speaking about that a little bit today. But more than anything, the essence of Christian Science and how it may be relevant to your life. So, to move on, I want to introduce you to Lillian Schwab, who was originally born Jewish, as I mentioned, but raised by a rather strict Catholic nurse in New York City. Her mother was a Ukrainian immigrant and working a lot, so Lillian was on her own and was studying piano at the early age of 7 and became an accomplished pianist and played, I think it was in 1947, at one of the halls at Carnegie Hall, is that correct?
Carnegie Recital Hall.
Recital Hall, wonderful. And
it's now called Weill Hall.
Weill Hall. In fact, we met at Carnegie Hall when I had some extra tickets to a Russian pianist friend of mine, Katya Grinyova, and I had the pleasure and honor of meeting you there as my guest. And so Lillian has been involved in music, and she has actually been involved in many different activities, including being part of an anarchy colony in upstate New York, and we'll get to some of that as we look at her life and what it has become as someone who helps other people most fundamentally with their healing, their development, and through Christian Science. So, welcome, Lillian.
Thank you. Mitchell, that was an extraordinary introduction. It was so extraordinary, I listened to it as if it was talking about a different subject from the one that I am familiar with.
Oh, my.
I don't mean to differ
with you. Is that a good thing or not?
Well, in the first place, you did mention mind over matter, didn't you?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I don't believe in that at all. This is not mind over matter. I should say, to begin with, that you have the feeling that we're talking about a religion. I am not talking about a religion. I'm talking about a science.
Mm.
Science to me is a completely different thing. Religion has not met the needs of people throughout the history of the world.
Yes.
If you look at all the wars, if you look at the Inquisition, if you look at the suffering and the Holocaust and everything else that has happened in the name of religion, I resist going into that category.
Yes.
So I don't mean to differ with you, but I want to be very clear.
Oh, please differ. That's okay.
That we need ground rules.
Yes, I'm all for it. I have no religious axe to grind at all.
In the first place, what is a science?
Yes.
A science is a body of knowledge, a provable body of laws. If it's not provable, it's not a science. Do you have a definition of matter? I'm very serious now. I don't want to take airtime to wait for your answer. If you don't know, tell me, and I'll provide mine.
I'm more interested in yours. I do have one, but I'm not going to take our time.
To me, matter is a form of energy. It's material. Anything that is material.
It's a concentrated form of energy. Correct.
Has a beginning and
it's
an end.
It's denser.
That's right. But the vibration of your eyes is different from the vibration of your skin.
Yes.
Your skin is different from the vibration of your bones. You are a very complex creature, but it is material. And anything material has a beginning and an end. God has no beginning and no end. When I speak of God, I'm speaking of a concept that it took Mary Baker Eddy, who is a brilliant, brilliant woman, 40 years to conceive. 40 years. I would like to give you a definition of God. Would that be of interest to you?
Please.
In the first place, there are four common denominators. Incorporeal, supreme, divine, infinite. Is there anything there that you wouldn't understand?
I would wish that you would go through each of those and define them individually.
Incorporeal means without a body.
Correct.
Supreme means the highest. Divine means spiritual. And infinite means no beginning and no end. And with those four common denominators, you have seven synonyms. Do you know what a synonym is?
I do.
Good. They are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. If you could think of anything other than those seven words to describe our life, you've got a new religion. Because that,
or a new science, as the case may be.
Could that be? That is complete. It takes everything in. There's only one word there that is not in the Bible. That is the word principle, which means the law. And everything hinges on the law. But mind, spirit, and soul are the individual characteristics of God.
I'm not going to say that those, for me, describe and delimit everything that is possible. But that doesn't matter.
Tell me what is possible beyond it.
I'm not sure yet. How about, did you use the word virtue?
That's an aptitude.
Well,
that's
you,
only a part of you, of a, shall I say, mind has an aptitude. Spirit has an aptitude.
I would
but
agree with that.
It is not, shall I say, fundamental of itself. So virtue is only a quality of action, but it is not a basic action.
I hear that you have a certain understanding and architecture that
yes.
I think is very valuable, and that's why I'm having you on the show, so you can really go forward with it. Whether I agree with every single aspect of it or not is secondary or immaterial.
Well, I'm a frustrated architect, in case you don't know. Even in my music, I was told
I always found my music architecturally. Okay. I must have sensed that in the atmosphere.
Because I like logic.
Yes. That's clear, and you're already laying things out in such a highly categorized way. I'm impressed, and I want to hear more. So please lay out. So this way people, our audience, can understand the fundamentals of Christian science.
I will put it very simply so that you cannot misunderstand me. This is primitive Christianity. This is the Christianity that Jesus lived in his day and age.
Of course, he was living a form of Jewish life.
Exactly. There would be no Christianity if there wasn't Judaism as a basis.
It sort of shows a little bit of the slipperiness of religion altogether, because how do you even tell the difference between the
But there wouldn't be any Jewishness if there wasn't Buddha.
Well, you see, I don't know about that, but certainly
objection. Oh, yes. If you study Buddhism, and I have been interested in comparative religions,
yes,
you'll find that there is a similarity in all of religions.
My word,
in
yes.
People reaching out for a higher power.
Yes,
something
indeed.
Beyond their own ability to understand. And
agreed.
If it's spiritual, it is not material. This spiritual Christianity. In the textbook, we have a textbook, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Eddy wrote a
what
book.
What is the name of?
Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She has tenets. I will only mention the first and the last. The first is, we take the inspired word of the Bible as our sufficient guide to eternal life.
And that's the New Testament you're referring
no,
to?
No, I'm not.
When you say the Bible?
The Bible is the Holy Bible, and that's Old Testament as well as New
okay.
Testament. We take, the key word there is the word inspired. Because the Bible, after all, is very largely a history book. A lot of people have gone into making what's in there. You don't take every word.
Literally.
The gospel truth.
The gospel truth. That's where the phrase came from. But yes, I understand.
All right. So, the first is we take the inspired word of the Bible as our sufficient guide to eternal life. Now, I said eternal life, and I am very precise in the way I use my terms. I mean that life is eternal. Do you think I'm going to die? Are you going to die? No. You're going to go into another phase of life.
The material body will become incorporeal, if you will.
Do you have a definition of life? I'm very hot on semantics. I'm sorry.
Yes, I see that. Why are you asking me the questions?
Because I'm doing it in a Socratic method.
I noticed.
I don't want to just preach.
No, I don't want you to preach either. I would like you to please lay out the tenets of
I will only
Christian
give you the
science,
last one.
And then from there I want to get into actually from the so-called theory of it, the theoretical architecture, into the actual work that you have done and you have seen in your many years
right.
of practice.
I'll just give you the last one.
Because that's where it lives, talking
the
about life.
One. Yeah. And we solemnly promise to watch and pray for that mind to be in us, which was also in Christ Jesus, to do unto others as we would have them do unto us, and to be merciful, just, and pure. Now, that is the last tenet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your question?
And this was written by Mary Baker Eddy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, on the one hand, you've got the Old Testament, you've got the New Testament. Do you also have the Apocrypha?
We do and we don't. In other words, if that's an inspired word, we will accept it. But it isn't all as inspired as the rest of the Bible.
Well, we've
Much
got
of it is just parable, imagination, stories, things like that.
Well, stories and parables are no
yes.
small thing out of the mouth of Jesus. And others.
No, but Jesus is not in the Apocrypha. That is
there
mainly
are references
the Catholic
to him,
Bible.
And I want to also reference the Nag Hammadi texts, which give us the book of Gospel of St. Thomas,
yes,
of Philip,
yes.
And there are actually more direct references to the life of Jesus there than you will find in the New Testament.
And they're finding more and more about Jesus. But remember, Jesus was a human man.
Mm.
So I am not worshiping Jesus. I have a definition of the Christ that I would like to
Please,
share with
I'm
you.
I'm glad you're bringing this up.
The Christ to me is the idea of God coming to human consciousness. Now, I did not say God coming. I said the idea of God coming to human consciousness. I'm very precise in my use of language
mm-hmm.
here. Now, Jesus embodied more of the Christ. But, Mitchell, you embody the Christ. I embody the Christ. We, each of us, are an example of the creation of God, and we can't deny that. But it is not our bodies. It is our thought.
Some would say it's our soul. What would you say to that?
I have a definition for soul. That's one of the aspects.
I'm sure you have a definition for everything.
That's one of the aspects of God's nature.
Mm.
Soul is the unique, one-of-a-kind, custom-made original of identity.
Uh-huh.
Identity is the key word with soul.
A unique blueprint of Lillian Schwab herself.
Of Mitchell Rabin himself.
That's right.
Exactly. And of each person, that is the identity. Now, interestingly enough, soul is a spiritual concept. But if we wish to translate it into the human category, it becomes our personality, which comprises our five physical senses. So how you see things and hear things and speak about things, you treat your grocer differently from your friend, from your relative. So it changes with your personality, but your soul is the spiritual source of your identity, and that is of God.
Yes.
So now mind is not soul. Mind is intelligence. You can say spirit is the activity of that intelligence.
Sure.
Soul is the identity. Principle is the law. And your definition of life is consciousness. If you were not conscious, you wouldn't know you were alive. But does consciousness need a body for existence? Think of it for a minute. It doesn't.
I have an answer to that without thinking.
All right, good. What is it?
No.
And then there's truth. Now, everybody says, what is truth? I have a very good, simple definition. Unchanging reality. If it changes, can you call it truth?
Only relative truth.
That's right. Absolute truth is unchanging.
Yes.
That is a quality of God.
And one of the aspects of absolute truth is that everything else is changing.
That's right. That's the only absolute true law in the material universe. Just that one law, the law of change.
And it is on that basis, Lillian, that because I happen to be particularly connected to the Chinese, ancient Chinese and Taoist traditions, it is all predicated on that one law.
That's right. Because they understood truth. Truth is understood by everyone who understands it is unchanging.
And that's why when you engage in comparative religion, whether it's Buddhist, Jewish, Egyptian, Taoist, Islamic, anything, you will always find, if there is truth, that law.
That's right. And love is the last synonym. It took me 10 years to really distinguish what the word love meant. And you're going to be amazed when I tell you, I consider it power. The only real, absolute power in the world is love.
Oh.
And love is the healing power.
Mm.
There is no healing without love. You can talk about all the miracles you want, talk about all the healings you want. Without love, it doesn't happen.
Mm.
Each synonym embodies all the other six. I would say to be intelligent about love. If mind is intelligent, it is with love. And if it's stupid, it's without love. You see my point?
And
you can take every negative.
Yeah.
Every negative is without love. Every positive truth is with
contains
love.
Contains love.
That's
now,
right.
Now, what is the relationship, Lillian, of love to compassion? The Buddhists, as you know, speak more
compassion
about
compassion. Compassion is a form of love.
It is a form of love. So, would you say they are interchangeable?
Compassion. Jesus never had sympathy. He had compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an empathy.
Yes.
It is an identification with what you are thinking of. And if it's good, it's of God. And by the way, that's another word for God.
Good.
if it's good, it's of God. And you just, simple.
So from that point of view, we're getting a bit abstract, and we will come back to the practicalities of the application of Christian Science, which I really want to get into. But I would like to ask you, if I may, what is the relationship then of God and good to evil?
There is no relationship.
What is your
definition of darkness?
I'm asking you.
The absence of light. Evil is only the absence of good.
So from that, the absence of good.
That's right.
But that could be a big thing.
That is nothing. It is a nothingness. You could go into a tremendous dark room. If you light a match where that light is, you see it. But you don't see the darkness, you see the light. Darkness is only the absence of light.
Mm.
Evil is the absence of good. Don't think that it is something of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to give it reality, you're never going to get over it. You're never going to heal. The last 100 pages of that book that I spoke of, our textbook, Science and Health,
mm-hmm.
are healings only through the reading of the book. Not through anybody else's work. Through the reading of the book, the reader absorbed certain truths. And when you absorb a truth, it affects your whole body.
It literally enters your cells.
Yes. People ask me, you know, how do I live the way I live? Because the main thing I do is I express gratitude every day. I'm free of pain. I'm free of negativity. I wake up and say, this is the day the Lord hath made. Be glad. Rejoice. Give thanks.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
And so I live. Now, the first sentence of the preface, to those leaning on a sustaining infinite, today is big with blessings.
Beautiful.
You see?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
The first sentence of Science and Health is an extraordinary sentence. The prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick. And I should say, what is your definition of sin? You see, sin is simply the mark of imperfection. And nothing that is material is perfect. Can you name anything material that's perfect?
Mm-mm.
There isn't anything.
No.
Because it has a beginning and an end, and it's only subject to change. So, the prayer that reforms the sinner and heals the sick is an absolute faith that all things are possible to God, a spiritual understanding of Him, an unselfed love. And I say to people, tell me, what is your spiritual understanding of God? And they give me all kinds of answers, but there's one simple answer, the highest sense of yourself.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean that you don't change from day to day as to what God is and who you are and what your highest sense is.
You and I are on the same wavelength.
All right.
We're on the same wavelength.
An unselfed love. What is that? That is not unselfish love. It's getting yourself out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We say, whatever holds human thought in line with unselfed love receives directly the divine power. Now, why should we now limit ourselves to the Old Testament when we have a New Testament?
I don't think we should.
Well, we don't. We don't in Christian Science. And while I have empathy for people who are Jewish and believe in the Old Testament, I say, fine, but don't stop there. Make your progress. And progress is a law of God.
Indeed. It's a law?
Of God. Progress is a law of God.
Because it's an aspect of...
And there is no retrograde
step. Changing. It's because progress is an aspect of the ever-changing nature of reality.
You know, once upon a time, millions and millions of years ago, we were an amoeba, maybe a paramecium. And just think of what we have evolved today. I wonder what we're going to be like a million years from today.
Do you remember what it was like then?
No, but I think that we're not going to have any legs because we'll do interstellar travel.
Yes.
So we don't need legs. We'll have balancing pads. Remember E.T.? That was a wonderful movie.
Surely.
because he didn't have an eye all around his head, which I thought we might evolve to, but he had a neck that swiveled, mm-hmm. and he could see all around in every direction.
That's right.
So whoever did that movie, I felt, knew about Christian Science. Yes.
We are speaking with Lillian Schwab, Christian Scientist at Large, healing many people or helping them with the process of healing through the power of love. And we'll be getting into that in just a moment. This is Mitchell J. Rabin for A Better World on Progressive Radio Network. And today we're really looking at the subject of Christian Science and how healing takes place and what healings have taken place. And for this part of the show, Lillian, I'd like to explore the actual work you have done with people, if you want to call it work.
It is.
Healings, and what actual changes have you seen in people, your clients, over the course of... Now, you are 100 years old right now, and you are one sprightly woman. You are a pleasure. You are clear as a bell, much clearer than many of my friends at my age. And delightful, humorous, and charming. Now, somehow, I would say that your belief, your faith, your understanding have contributed to this wisdom and this aliveness that you embody. And I'm just complimenting you because I'm so happy to be with you. But I'd like to hear how you harness this.
Let me tell you
to
about the
your
first,
actual work.
The first major healing that I did
was on yourself, wasn't it?
No. Oh, well, 30 years before I came into it.
Why don't we start with that?
Oh, during the Depression, and I'm going back to 1930, I had no money, I had no health, I had no job. I was living on the charity of people, and someone, a woman who was in vaudeville, did bird calls. Do you remember they had vaudeville acts?
Yeah, sure.
She took me to a church. Now, I didn't know what kind of a church it was, but on the wall, it said, "Divine love always has met and always will meet every human need." And that's all I remember for the entire hour that I was there. The next day... This was in Philadelphia. I got a call from New York agent. He said, "I have a job for you." And I had my work. I suddenly had my health. I had everything that I needed, my supply. And I knew it was a Christian Science healing. Mm-hmm. But I never did anything about it for 30 years. And so I have patience for anyone that I know up to 30 years. But 30 years later... I was on the board of the League of Women Voters, and a woman there on the board was a Christian Scientist passing out invitations. Oh, I said, I know about Christian Science. But I came up from Florida with some grapefruit for someone, and I went to give it to them, and they had had an operation on their prostate. It was terminal cancer, and it was spread so that the doctors just sewed him up and said, "Better go home because there's really nothing that we can do about it." And he said to me, "I understand you're interested in Christian Science. Is there any help for me?" Well, the dam burst. I said, "Nothing is too far gone but too late, but God may save." I gave him a copy of the textbook and a copy of a book called Century of Christian Science Healing, Stories of People Who Had Been Healed. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days later, he called me up and said, "Would you get me a practitioner?" Now, a practitioner is someone equivalent to a doctor in the medical field who does work in that area. I was thrilled. So I went to about the 6 best practitioners I knew in New York City and said, "Here's a man with cancer. He wants a practitioner." One said, "I'm too busy." Another said, "I'm going on vacation." A third said, "I'm moving." Everybody had an excuse. Well, I called my teacher. I had a teacher. He said, "Lillian, what's the matter with you? You had instruction. Take the case yourself." Well, I had to be obedient. I had to put my money where my mouth was, in other words.
Yes.
So I prayed. I sat in my room in a rocking chair at 45 Christopher Street in Greenwich Village. And he lived up at 190th Street in Washington Heights. But there's only one mind, one God, no separation of time or place in a spiritual sense. And I prayed to begin with, I acknowledge present perfection. Right now, not tomorrow, not the next day. Right now, God is on the job. Let me ask you, if you have a lot of clouds, does that mean the sun isn't shining?
Mm-mm.
No, the sun is shining. And do you think to the sun there's ever a night time?
Not no. From the sun's point of view.
That's it. So God is God. And whether there are clouds or not, I know that
change.
God is there.
Yeah.
And so I had affirmations of truth and denials of error there. And a couple of days passed and I didn't hear from him. And I called up and his wife answered the phone. Oh, she said, Paul's mountain climbing in the Berkshires. Now that was a man that was couldn't get out of a chair to greet me when I went.
Essentially
to see him.
A later stage of prostate cancer. The doctors had sent him home and said, we can do nothing more for you.
That's right. That's right.
I couldn't even have a conversation with him because he was
camping. And when he died at 92, it was not from cancer.
It was from?
I don't remember. Something else. Whatever it was.
Right.
And you
that was your first case.
My first major case. And you will never die unless you give your consent. So don't worry that it's going to come upon you unawares.
Interesting.
There are no such things as accidents. You're careless in your thinking if you have an accident.
Careless in thinking that there is possibly the existence of an accident?
No, careless about something that you're worried about or negative about.
Inattentive.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So when you sat in your rocking chair, Lillian, you imagined in the present the perfection of God?
I didn't imagine.
What did you do?
I knew. And I knew that I knew. You have to...
You have to know.
You know. That's right. It isn't imagining.
You gotta know.
I have to know. And I had.
Did you picture him?
You see, I didn't believe in God when I started. I just wanted to understand the textbook. I didn't believe in God. I wanted to understand what the textbook was about. But after months of saying, "I need a sign," do you remember in the Bible how Paul had a sign on the road to Damascus when Jesus said to him, what's the trouble? You know you're not following me. Well, I was walking Washington Square North between Fifth Avenue and University Place. Did I tell you about this?
No.
Halfway down the block, and this is about 7-8 months after I said, I have to have a sign. If there is a God, I'm not going to imagine it. I'm not going to make it up. I must know. And there in the middle of the block, I stopped, and there was a column of light in front of me. It was a beautiful column of warm light. And I walked into that column, and I vibrated. It's as if it was 45 years ago, but it's as if it happened today or this morning. How real it was. I
Beautiful.
Was nothing but a vibration in that column, and it said to me, God is loving you. There is a God, and God is loving you. It was unmistakable. I could not get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, the light faded, and I came back to myself, and I went down to the corner to University Place, and I was saying, oh, you forgot to do something, and why did you carelessly forget? I said, stop. God doesn't judge. God doesn't criticize. And you don't know more than God. And that was the last day of my life that I ever criticized myself or anybody else.
That's quite a statement.
That's a big statement.
Huge statement.
It changed my life. It changed my marriage. It changed my health. I used to have terrible headaches. Anybody would say, take this, try that. I tried everything under the sun. I had these terrible headaches. And I said to someone, I'm going to give Christian Science a chance. If it kills me, I'm not going to take a pill. And about 5 or 6 years later, I was talking to someone and I said, it just occurred to me. It isn't that I didn't take a pill. I never had a headache. Now I can tell you that in 45, 50 years, I've never had a headache. I don't know what it is.
Beautiful.
This is a different way of living, of thinking.
Now, I want to interrupt you, because we have a few minutes left, and I want some very definite things to get understood by our audience. You see, I have to put myself in their shoes and make sure they understand the points that are necessary for being able to apply the goodness that you're presenting. One is, you told me earlier that this science does not require faith on the part of the client. Is that so?
I said faith is not the answer. You have to build on faith to understanding.
Okay. So it's a step along the way toward understanding.
I said there's belief, faith and understanding.
Okay, fine. So someone who...
I don't decry faith.
No. I'm just asking, because there are many people who are listening who say, yeah, it sounds good. I'd like not to have any more headaches. I'd like not to have prostate cancer. I'd like to not have any cancer. I'd like not to have any illness at all. And I'd like to be in touch with my eternal life. All of the above, if not physical immortality itself. So what do I have to do? Do I have to believe in Jesus? Do I have to become a card-carrying Christian Scientist? Do I have to give up my current religion in exchange for Christian Science?
No.
So what are the answers to those? No, no, no?
This is a science. I said it's not a religion.
However, let me also remind you that, and we both know this, that the ancient teachings were all from India, from Tibet, from China, and elsewhere, were all sciences, and it really was only at the onset of the Catholic Church that separated religion from science, and it was for various political and economic reasons, my opinion,
and many others. I can't agree with you on that.
They were ancient religions. They were ancient religions that had within it an aspect of science, including the Gnostic teachings.
If there's truth in it, it has to be an aspect
of science. Of course.
I don't deny that.
The art and science of yoga.
But that,
all
but
of these
the practice
were
of it. The dogma and the culture, the habits.
That's the religious
eating
part
habits, worshipping habits. All of that is not science. That's religion.
Well, we find, I mean, if you want to open up the laws of Kashrut, just as an example, that is the kosher laws of Judaism, we find today that there's actually a scientific basis to a lot of those religious notions.
I don't call that a scientific basis. That is a relative science.
Okay.
Not an absolute science.
Okay. So, coming back, Lillian, do people need to believe in the fundamental teachings of Christian Science, or is there a way for them to come into harmony internally, i.e. health and well-being again, without belief?
You have a benchmark, and that benchmark is it good? If it's good, it's of God. I don't get very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making it esoteric.
Well, let me ask you this. Of the many people that you have worked with, I imagine that there have been many healings, but there have also been those who have not been healed.
Right.
Tell us about those. Why have people not been healed? And do you have specific examples?
Many, many. I have people who are healed of one thing and not another. It's all according to what their subconscious mind is. Some of them have habits from childhood that make it very difficult for them to see truth.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult.
And so that's the benchmark of whether people will be healed or not?
Mm-hmm. What is depression, after all? A lack of hope. Why? It's because maybe when they were young as children, they were punished for something and it might have been unjust, and they have never gotten over it. I'm not going to judge, but I'm saying there are many, many
things. It's another thing to observe. Give an example of someone with whom you worked maybe steadily prior to 30 years, and the healing didn't happen the way you or he or she imagined. Do you have a case in point that you could share with us?
Yes. The idea that we age. See, I'm simple. I don't make
That's
it
okay. That's
for
a good
you.
One. A popular one, no less.
That's right. And I'm fighting that, too. Mm-hmm. But the strength of the universal knowledge of age, this is not easy to overcome.
You mean the universal assumption that we age and die?
Yes, that's right.
Well, that you're going for the big one, I mean, you know. Well,
that's what I'm talking about.
Well, how about a client who came to you with a certain illness and said, Lillian, can you help me with this?
I've had three people in my years of practice. I have been in the journal. I am, by the way, there are two agencies that recognize healing, the AMA and Christian Science. The government legally recognizes those two healing agencies.
Oh.
So we are legally recognized, and I am journalisted, meaning that I have passed certain requirements. And
as a Christian Science healer.
And I have enough testimonies of my work that has entitled me to become a practitioner. But three times in my history, there are people I could not work with because there was not the love that we needed.
Coming now, from their heart or between
both,
the two of you?
Both. Me both. And them, yes.
So in some sense, there wasn't a
yes.
a chemistry.
I knew it.
I see.
Only three times.
And so that's an incredible track record, if I may say.
Yes. But that's why I'm still alive.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm...
You've had so many successes.
That's right. And if I wasn't adjusted and harmonious, what's my definition of heaven? Harmony. I was having a knockdown, drag-out argument with my husband. And I said, he'll never see it from my point of view. I will never see it from his point of view. What is this business, two minds? There's only one God, one mind. What is this? Now, I shut my mouth to think, one God, one mind. I didn't say anything to him, but his mouth shut. And we looked at it, each other. We couldn't remember what we were arguing about. Now, I learned a lesson there.
Yes.
And that lesson was, you never solve an argument. You can only dissolve it.
Oh, that's a great truth.
That should be my swan song.
I like that. Yeah. Oh, I like that. So there are, of the people with whom you've worked, how many are those approximately over the course of these 40, 50 years? Do you have any idea how many people you've worked with?
Much of it. Hundreds and hundreds.
Hundreds. Only three you couldn't work with, and are you suggesting then that all the rest have seen, experienced a healing?
Maybe, maybe not. I cannot judge for them. I never invade the privacy of someone else's
but
mind.
But from a medical...
Only my thought about them.
Okay, this is where... Okay, we want to talk science, and we want to understand that if someone comes to you with a measured medical condition, such as the gentleman you spoke of who came first with prostate
yes.
cancer, that was measurable. And the next thing you know, he was off to the Berkshires and living a life. And how old was he when he came to you?
80.
80. So we know he lived another 12 years.
Yes.
Okay. That's admirable for someone with prostate cancer. That's in a later stage of development. So do you know, can you share with us an example of someone who came to you with a measured diagnosis and left after your treatments without it?
Sure, many people. They well, move away or they die. They may give up. I never give up. Now, that's something you have to know about me.
That's another important point. Yeah.
I never give up. Anyone can give me up. But I don't, because God doesn't.
Understood. Give me, if you would, and the audience, an example of someone with whom you've worked, perhaps a favorite case of yours, who someone did have a diagnosis, and when working with you, that diagnosis was no longer relevant, i.e., they were cured or healed, whichever word you'd like.
They were or weren't?
Were healed.
Dozens and dozens.
Just
every week I have somebody that's healed. Every week. Not a week passes, but somebody isn't healed of
something. Somebody who comes in with a diagnosis.
That's right.
Cancer is a very popular one these
That's
days.
That's right.
And then after going through the process...
Yes. They may have fallen fractured an ankle, and the doctor says you're going to be off your feet for 5 weeks, and in 1 week they're healed. Or they come to visit me, they can hardly walk, and
they walk out without a cane.
Give
me a specific example of someone you're thinking of.
I am. I'm thinking right now of somebody that just fractured a wrist.
Recently?
Yes.
Okay. Tell the story so we understand the process that
they went through. She had an x-ray mm-hmm. and had a splint made. And the doctor said it would take about 5 or 6 weeks before he would think that she would be here. But it's not so.
How many times did she come to see you?
She hasn't come. We talk. She lives in Pennsylvania. I have people from Thunder Bay, Ontario, Nigeria, Kenya, Hawaii, California, Atlanta, all over. There is only one world, one mind, one God, and there is no separation.
They call...
Telephone. Now, I used to have a lot of office visits. Now it's mainly telephone work.
So tell us what happens in this call. The woman called and said, I have a fractured wrist.
Yes.
Her x-ray bore that out.
Yes.
The doctor said it's going to take at least 5 weeks. I know, I had a fractured wrist. Some years back, and it happened in Ontario, as a matter of fact. And I used magnets and a lot of things, but in fact, I had to have it, cast, and it did heal. But it took, I didn't know you, so it took a while. So she called with the x-rayed broken wrist, and in 1 week, what was the process you led her through?
Just knowing that God is good. God couldn't cause anything to happen. God doesn't know anything about a fractured wrist. How would anything spiritual know what's happening materially? Does the sun shine on the good and not the good? The sun shines on everybody. God is love. That's everybody. Nobody's outside of that.
So basically you are seeing...
Knowing the universality of it.
So is it a sense of the perfectedness of all creation?
Yes, the perfect bond between God and us. We are God expressed.
Yes, indeed. And through that knowing, all things come into, on the material level, come into alignment and harmony.
There's a sentence.
I'm asking you. I'm not telling you. I'm asking.
But I'm answering by saying, hold thought steadfast to the enduring, the good, and the true. And you will bring these into your experience proportionably to their occupancy of your thought.
Yes.
All right?
Yes, indeed. Give one more example. We have a diminishing amount of time. One more example of a client with whom you worked that you feel particularly pleased about the results.
Somebody who was unable to get a job. Absolutely unable. No interview has produced any work for him, and he's in trouble. But we know that he's needed someplace. And that place needs him. Not just that he needs the place needs him.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that he is always in his right place. It's not an address. But in God's world, he is in the right spiritual place. And knowing it, he goes to the interview and he gets it.
Beautiful. So you helped him see that, sense that, and know that.
Right. No, God did. I don't. I'm only a...
Messenger. Medium, that's right. Facilitator.
That's right. If I had to take the responsibility, it would be too much for me.
Oh, I wouldn't suggest that. Right.
Because I would have life and death in my hands. Oh. I don't have it.
Of course.
That's God's will.
Have you been in situations where people have come to you with stage 3, stage 4 cancer, and that has turned around so they were able to live a longer, healthier, cancer-free life?
I had my own experience with that. Because I know what cancer is. And I had somebody, the The smell of it was so strong it turned my stomach, and I found that I was having that smell about my body, and so I felt that I had cancer. And so I worked for my own thought, and I'm through.
God bless.
I'm through. I don't have it.
Lillian Schwab, I want to just thank you from the depth of my heart for being our guest today. Truly.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I also want to thank good friends of mine, Mary Houston and Richard Harvey, for introducing us. And to them, I am grateful. And do you want to give your phone number out?
Yes, that's right.
Please do.
212-600-4684.
One more time.
I repeat. 212-600-4684. And I believe in working 24/7.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your good work and your beautiful life.
Thank you.
So appreciate it. This is Mitchell J. Raven for A Better World. Thanks so much for joining us. Visit us at our website at www.abetterworld.net. We are seeking to make a difference in a similar kind of comparable way as Lillian by bringing people like Lillian to the foreground, even though she is a unique soul, as I know you felt and saw. Thanks again for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you all next week.